You are listening to Latin Waves, a weekly syndicated program. For more information about our program, visit www.latinwavesmedia.com.
Dame tu querer, dame tu querer en mi vida, dame de beber de tu claridad y tu alegría, que me ayudará a calmar mi sed, amor. Dame el corazón entero, dame tu mirar. Porque sin tu amor siento que muero y el sol ya nunca volverá a alumbrar. Dame tu cariño, que tu luz es mi única verdad, amor. Dame tu querer, princesa, dame de beber de tu piel salada y tu belleza, de la oscuridad secreta de tu piel. Déjame caer al abismo del deseo, quiero conocer dónde está la luz de tu misterio. Quedar ciego con tu claridad, mujer. Dame tu cariño, que tu luz es mi única
It's a great privilege to have on our show the poet Eduardo Galeano. His latest book, Mirrors, speaks of the stories of almost everyone, a collection of vignettes that depicts the breadth of human history. What a wonderful book, known throughout Latin America for his groundbreaking book in 1971, The Open Veins of Latin America, an indictment of the plunder of the region by European and U.S. imperialists. Poeta, welcome to our show, and thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you. And thank you for giving me this title of poet. I feel proud of it because I'm afraid I don't deserve it. I write in prose, not in verse. But perhaps, being as I feel I am, a loyal interpreter, translator of reality, perhaps I am also doing poetry, even if I don't know I'm doing so, like that character of Molière was speaking prose and he didn't know.
You are correct to acknowledge the title of poet. For me, I think in terms of a poet as someone who is able to inspire a sentiment that moves people, that steers our feelings inside, that goes beyond our intellectual capacity to see and inform or receive information, but goes to our feelings, our ability to experience the sentiment that unites us, the something that moves us, the something that we are more than just intellectual beings, but rather I think a poet has the ability to convey a message in a way that inspires people to do something about it.
Okay, I feel proud of it. I hope I deserve such an honorable title. You are very generous anyway. Thank you very much. All I want to do is to try to see the unseen, the other side of the moon, the other side of the earth, and perhaps this is in some ways an act of poetry. Perhaps, yes.
There are events in life that can have a long-lasting impression and can sometimes be part of a defining moment in our lives. And sometimes that experience can come from a book. Many writers write with intent to convey information, sometimes to denounce acts of injustice. I think the book Open Veins of Latin America has had a special place in the consciousness of people in Latin America, as it opened our eyes and offered a language of indignation against the plunder of the region by European and U.S. imperialists. It became one of the best-selling books in the Amazon.com charts. How should people read your book, Open Veins of Latin America?
For me, in my personal life, the Open Veins of Latin America was a port of departure, not a port of arrival. I mean, it was my first real book, inspired by the intention of showing the other side of reality, the unknown past, the unknown history, not as a homage to the past, but just as a way to trying to help a little to change reality. The first step to begin changing reality is to try to see it as it is. Otherwise, we wouldn't be able to change it. And I think the book may have helped to awake conscience all over Latin America and even in the United States and other countries in this sense. But afterwards, I wrote many other books with the same intention, but written in a quite different way. Open Veins is a classic essay. It's inside the genre of literary essays. But afterwards, I tried to invent a different language, short texts, as you said, quite a mixing all the literary genres in a single synthesis, perhaps a poetic synthesis, trying to recover reality in all the sides of it, not only political economy, because Open Veins is mainly a book about the history seen from this point of view, the political economy point of view. And then on the other books I wrote, several books, up to the last one, Mirrors, an almost universal history, as the title says, with a certain humor, I tried to show other sides of reality, not only the political economy. I mean, not only exploitation, not only horrors, but also the feast of lies, in all its diversity, because the best of the world, the best of the world, is the many worlds that are inside each world.
We often talk about the importance of creating communities that are diverse, pluralistic, and inclusive. But our societies operate under a system of capitalism that completely denies the role of diversity. It actually advocates for a homogeneous, consumption-based, individualistic society that maximizes individual profits at the expense of others. So how do we create a more egalitarian and inclusive society? What are the barriers that we need to overcome?
You know, the problem, especially in Latin America, but not only in Latin America, also in the other America, North America, the United States, is that our countries were born from a big lie. Since the beginning, it was a denial of our diversity. And this was perfectly well translated by the first constitutions, which denied the rights to almost all the population. For instance, my own country, Uruguay, the first constitution in 1830 gave the right to be a citizen only one person out of 10. And in the first elections, 95% of the population did not vote. And this is also true for all the Americas. The first constitution in the United States established that a black woman or a black man was equivalent to 3/5 part of a person. When I see that this intention of President Zelaya in Honduras to change the constitution as an alibi for the coup of Etat, it's a possible explanation for the military coup. I think about the United States, for instance. What would happen there in the United States if with the same constitution, with the first one, Barack Obama wouldn't be able to be the president because he would be considered the 3/5 parts of a person. And the same thing about all the other American countries. Bolivia, for instance, the first constitution of Bolivia gave civil rights to the 3% of the population, denying the fact that Bolivia was, and is still, a country made up mostly of Indians. This revelation of the true identity, diverse and with a vast majority of Indian population, the revelation occurred in 3 years ago. It took centuries to rediscover Bolivia. And it happened when Evo Morales, which is an Aymara Indian, was selected president by an avalanche of votes.
That's such an important point, this rich diversity of culture and heritage of indigenous people has been hidden from our historical context. In Canada, we have an indigenous population that until some 20, 30 years ago were not even able to vote, were not even considered human in our recent history. We have residential schools that were predominantly designed to put an end to the cultural and language heritage of indigenous people in Canada. Why is the history of indigenous people so threatened to the capitalist system and to most governments worldwide that is kept deliberately hidden from a cultural history of societies?
The problem is that nowadays the central power in the world impose over all the countries a single possible way of life. And this way of life, well, is mixing of violence and pollution. Each baby being born with a gun in one hand and a steering wheel in the other, wars and cars, violence and pollution, are seen as a single possible way of life. And I think, siento y pienso, that this is the explanation for the very, very difficult recognition of diversity and, for instance, the very, very difficult of the rediscovery of native cultures in our countries. Because these cultures are dangerous from the point of view of the owners of power. Why? Well, because of community and communion. Community as a different, another different way of life, not centered on greed, but on solidarity. And communion, when I say communion, I'm meaning communion with nature. All these native cultures, unbelievably alive, after more than five centuries of denying and chasing and crime, it's a sort of a miracle. They could keep alive their central value, which is the community of life and the community and the communion with nature, the certainty that we are members of the same family. Not only we have legs, but also all those brothers and sisters who have branches or wings. And that's why it's so important that in Ecuador last year, the new constitution recognized for the first time in all history of humanity the rights of nature. It was the first time. It took who knows how many millenniums to obtain this recognition in a constitution. Nature as a source of rights. And this came very deeply inside from the Indian culture of Ecuador. This is the source of the source.
To the extent that we have separated ourselves from nature and lost that sense of communion with nature, we see it as a commodity, something that can be caught, burned, spoiled, soiled, sold for profit. We are not only destroying nature, but also destroying ourselves in the process as we pollute our water, our food supply, in this very myopic view of the world through the eyes of the economy, through the eyes of profit-making. Many have pointed to education as a way to begin the transformation of our societies. We can restore a more sustainable way of life by educating people. Can education save us? What kind of education? So far, the education we've had has been one that teaches us about domination, the ability of some to rule over others. What is needed to create transformative change? Is education enough?
Well, you know, education itself is not enough, because we should begin asking what sort of education are we receiving? If it's a real education in which the teachers teach but also learn teaching, we wouldn't arrive really to offer to the new generations a real image of another possible world. And of course, education itself has its limitations. You know, the old proverb has it that teaching fishing is better than handing out fish. But there is a bishop who is also a poet, Pedro Casaldáliga, in Brazil, living in the Amazon, that he says, well, yes, this is correct. A very good thought, a very good intention, but then he asks, but suppose someone buys the river that had belonged to all, and this someone outlaws fishing, or suppose toxic waste pollutes the river and poisons the fish. In other words, suppose what happens is what is happening right now. And I share this point of view, this dangerous question by Bishop Casaldáliga.
The idea that violence and poverty are natural occurrences. We live in a world that seems to have perpetual violence and poverty everywhere you look. And there are some geographical areas that are poor and that there seems to be nothing to be done about it. And the violence seems to be also a natural phenomenon. What is your opinion of this?
This is a system saying days and nights that we are doomed to go on exterminating each other. And I don't share this conviction, because this conviction is not honest at all. It is born from the military industry. This is a world, an upside-down world, which consecrates the best energies and the most important economic resources to the production of death. Each minute, 15 babies are being killed by a system which denies them food or medicines. Each minute, 15 children killed by this system, which at the same time, during the same minute, is spending $3 million in the industry of killing, in the industry of death, in the military industry. $3 million per minute. So the world is organized in such a way that we may all begin asking this obvious question. Wouldn't it be much better if we work for life and now for death? Let death do her job. It's very well done already, but let's stop helping her.
Thank you so much for being with us. Poet Eduardo Galeano's latest book is Mirrors, Stories of Almost Everyone. Poeta Galeano, muchísimas gracias por estar con nosotros. It's been a real pleasure having you on our show. Un abrazo.
Un abrazo.
Un abrazo. Muchísimas gracias. Muchísimas gracias.
Bueno, chao.
Hasta pronto. Chao.
Pra que tanta dor? Pra que tanto ódio? Se somos irmãos e temos, e temos, e temos que dar as mãos. Pra que tanta dor? Pra que tanto ódio? Se somos irmãos e temos, e temos, e temos que dar as mãos. Oh, 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 oh. A nossa terra está a morrer. tormento, olha o tormento que vem cá de dentro. A nossa terra está a sofrer demais. Oh, 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 oh. Olha aquela mamã, já não tem lágrimas, já não tem lamento. A nossa terra está a morrer. Angola é tão grande, tão rica e tão linda, que dá pra todos nós e pra quem ama Angola. Oh, 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 oh. Angola é tão bela, tão rica e tão linda, que dá pra todos nós e pra quem ama Angola. Angola é tão bela, Angola é tão linda, tão rica e tão grande, que dá pra todos nós e pra quem ama Angola.
We have come to the end of our show, Latin Waves. Latin Waves is a weekly syndicated program produced and broadcast from the studios of CGSF Radio in Burnaby, BC. The program is available free of charge to campus and community stations across Canada and the US. For more information about our work or to support our efforts, please visit our website at www.latinwavesmedia.com. Bye for now.